Hello and welcome to ABW Radio Live. I am your host, Chris, as I always am, and I'm joined by two gentlemen this afternoon to talk about Arsenal again. Oh, for the love of God. Afternoon, Carl. Afternoon, Jace.
Hello.
Hi.
Jace. That's the most that's the most hi I've ever heard you say that. That sums
I
up
just
how
I
we're
want to
feeling.
I'm trying to put on the same poor performance for our listeners that the Arsenal put on for us today. Hence no background. All you get you just get to see my pots and pans and my kitchen. So you're stuck with two poor performances in a row from people associated with Arsenal.
Difference is,
So
Chase, you turned up. So, that's, oh,
yeah, well,
Leicester!
Leicester just coming up.
Leicester! Go on, Mahrez.
And
I've always
I
thought you
don't
that
get
you were missing.
I don't get paid quite as much as some people do to come on and fall over a ball running at 300 miles an hour.
We'll come to that. Don't worry. We'll come to that. I think it's 500 miles an hour. Don't sell him short, Chase.
Ah, well, I won't.
Anyway, right. So obviously we all want to know what we're here to talk about. So, in your very best, do your very best to talk about today's game. Carlos, start with you. Just thoughts.
Shit. I said to you before, and I tweeted it as well. I've seen sort of Arsenal, lose 4-0 to bloody Southampton, lose 3-2 to a very poor Man United side. That was probably the worst performance I've ever seen Arsenal play. That the performance was it was just poor. There was just no hunger, no fight. There was nothing in it today. They just didn't. It's like they couldn't be bothered. It's almost like the season is over for them already, and they're on the beach. It's just absolutely the performance is just really bad. I don't know what they were thinking. I mean, the team. I know we could probably get onto it in a minute, and I'll let you bring it up, Chris. But the lineup was for me was wrong for the game. But even with the team we've got the team are full of quote unquote world class players, and we can't beat a Sunderland team that's fighting relegation. That's just it's just pathetic. It really is.
Not good. I agree there. Jace, what do you wanna add?
It looks like we knew we're not in the league, and we're still just showing up to collect our paycheck. And it looks like everybody's already booked their vacations, and looks like they're gonna have to book them early because if we're in fourth, looks like we're gonna have to come back early from them to hit those qualifier rounds for Champions League. So it's disappointing that against a team that still, is struggling and trying to stay away from relegation, we knew what they were going to do. It's Fat Sam. We know how he sets up, and it's just really unfortunate that this is the way that we show up against a team like this when we know that they're hungry and we need to be just as hungry because right now, even fourth place isn't guaranteed.
I swear, every time I look at Sam Allardyce, I'm just waiting for him to just. And now we're doing. Every time he does look like a budget meatloaf, and when you look like a budget meatloaf, you really know you've got problems. But nevertheless, he was well set up against us, so I'll give him credit for that. Carl, you touched sort of on the lineup then. You didn't feel that Mertesacker was the right choice. I could sort of say I can see why he left him in. You would, I'm guessing you would preferred Gabriel, I'm guessing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even Tom mentioned it. Shout out to Tom, by the way. Tom mentioned it as well, and I agreed with him. Sunderland have got Jermaine Defoe, who's a zippy little striker. He's quick. He runs into space. Why would you play Mertesacker against a player like that? It makes no sense. Teams have been doing it to us for ages. If you've got a fast striker, play him up against Mertesacker. We know that Mertesacker's slow. And for me, that needed someone like Gabriel in the squad who is a bit faster than Per, who can keep up with Jermaine Defoe. And for some unknown reason, Per likes to play on the halfway line. We like to play that push up really high when we're playing Per, when you cannot get in behind. And if Sunderland were a little bit better, the amount of times they caught us on the break, it's just silly. And to play Mertesacker against someone like Jermaine Defoe, for me, it's just totally wrong. Really is. I don't get it. I don't know if Coquelin's injured. why wasn't Coughlin playing today? I would have preferred probably Ramsey and Coughlin rather than Ramsey and Elneny. I know, obviously, Wenger's trying to sort of test out his whole squad, but we needed that defensive reassurance. And as we both know, Ramsey's not a defensive midfielder, nor is Elneny. So where's the defensive cover in the team? It doesn't sort of make sense.
Jace, I'd get your thoughts on that. Do you think that maybe, and again, I don't know, I'm just putting it out there, do you think it was maybe Mertesacker starting to combat the physical nature of Sunderland attacking set pieces, for example? They're a big side, they've got a lot of big defenders and quite big, and Wabi Kazri's not a small guy. Neither is Kone at the back. Maybe it was a sort of a ploy to try and stop them at set pieces, where obviously Sam Allardyce excels, or his teams excel. Do you think there's an argument for that, maybe?
I do think there is an argument for that. I don't think it's the argument that we can probably make. I think it's, hey, we had a good game with him in there last time. He is our captain, blah, blah, blah. Let's run him back out there and see how he does. We've beaten Sunderland with Defoe, I think, with Mertesacker back there before. We've won games with Mertesacker in there against pacey strikers and strikers who try to run in behind. I think maybe it was just, Gabriel's still really learning this league and we want to give, our captain a little bit more of a shot. I don't think we actually tried to be, let's look tactically and they're going to have this off of set pieces and corners and it'll be nice to have. I don't think it was that at all. I think it was just giving them a game out there because we played decent with them out there last game. So why not check them on for this game, which I wasn't so concerned with it. I don't think he was. We've got so many other issues defending that by the time it gets to Mertesacker, we usually don't leave him in the best positions anyway. So I thought yeah, it's fine. If we concede something, it probably won't just be because of Mertesacker.
I was with you. I personally, just personal point of view, I don't want Gabriel anywhere near the starting lineup at the moment. Personally, I just think he looks like a bit of a cat on a hot tin roof, but that's just me. Carl, let's talk about up front, because obviously a few eyebrows were raised when Olivier Giroud started. I know it divides opinion, and I know me and Jace probably sit in the camp that does sort of feel that he does give us quite a lot, but he had a frustrating day today. Movement, that I think that's what really struck me today, his movement wasn't as good as usually it is. He does usually offer us a bit of movement. Today, he looked frustrated, cheesed off, ineffective. Do you think that's as a result of him being out the side, or do you just think he's just not at it at the moment?
There is something wrong with him at the moment. By wrong, I mean...
You mean three strippers in a bedroom in a hotel at night?
Maybe. I don't know. I like I said, we always say this, he's a confidence player, and at the moment he is playing with no confidence whatsoever. And you're right what you said. His movement was non-existent today. I would love to see a stat, I don't know if there is one, of the amount of pass times he passes in the box rather than shoots. I've never seen a striker that passes so much in the box rather than take a shot. It's, I don't know. We always say, and I believe this, that at what Giroud does, he's the best for knocking the ball down and getting it to another player. And he showed that today when he knocked it down to, I think it's Iwobi. He's good at that. But for a goal scorer, I just don't think he's kind of what we need at we don't need him at the moment. We need someone else who is guaranteed to sort of put the ball in the back of the net. But I can't see why he started today. I know, like, you go back and you say, we scored 5 out of 6 goals against Sunderland or something like that. But that was when he was on form. At the moment, he's far, far, far from his best. And him starting today was, I guess, a bit of a confidence booster for us that towards him from Arsene Wenger to say, look, even though you're not playing well, I'm still going to put you in and, you still try and get me a goal. But today, it just didn't work.
I again thought potentially, and again, I could be wrong. I wonder if it was again the defensive side of things, the set piece sort of, the ability to defend the set pieces, because he is actually very, very good at that side of things. I just wonder if maybe Arsene Wenger expected the old aerial bombardment. Maybe that's why he was in. And like you say, a bit of a nod of a sort of show of confidence that he does believe in him. Maybe I could be wrong again, but yeah, not his best day. I think it's fair to say. Jace, want to ask you about Aaron Ramsey. A lot of people have accused me of Ramsey hate. I don't hate Ramsey. I don't hate any of our players. In fact, I love them all in different variables. But I was really surprised that he started this game ahead of, again, I don't know what happened to Coquelin, but I was surprised.
Probably the same thing that happened to Campbell. They played too well.
Well, yeah, maybe so. I have to say, I would like to see, with all this money we've got in the bank, I'd like to see a cattle prod installed in the tunnel. And every time Aaron Ramsey does one of those fucking infuriating back heels, I'd like to see him cattle prodded. Why? Just why, Jace? Do you think he insists on trying these ridiculous flicks and tricks when he's good enough to just do the simple things?
Yeah, I think it's because he knows that he's good enough to do the simple things, and he wants to try to do these complicated things to make himself sort of look good, and he probably does it in training, and it comes off when everybody's going at, like, three-quarter speed. And then you get a team who just doesn't give a shit, wants to kick your ankles, and it's not going to work. And I think that's really what it is. And he the one thing with back heels is just it's very difficult to get the actual weight right on it in the right direction all the time. And it was the same thing, and everybody knows my love for him, but Giroud with all his little layoffs at the top of the box with his back to goal get infuriating as well at times too. And so it's just that's what those two players want to do. And Ramsey with that back heel, I think that's what he wants his signature. He wants a back heel to eventually just be called the Ramsey. The sad thing is what it's turning into is a failed back heel is becoming a Ramsey. And I think he does. He's been best when he's focused on the little things, and just tried to keep possession, keep the ball, and keep it moving. As opposed to do all his tips, tricks and flicks and all this kind of stuff that we have seen him do, and he's done some magnificent sort of skill moves in the past, but they've always been more, I think, instinctual than they have been planned. And I think he tries to do a little too much with it and tries to create too much flair when there's really not any necessity for it there. That's usually when you get in trouble.
Agreed. Yeah. If any of our players did what Koke has just done for Sevilla, we'd be all right. Absolutely twatted it in for the edge of the box. Anyway, Carl, what's your thoughts on Ramsey? I mean, he's had spells where he's been seemingly undroppable. He's now got genuine competition from a returning Jack Wilshere, assuming he doesn't get hit by a bus or injured on the way home. We can but hope. But do you what's your sort of thoughts on Ramsey? I mean, does he sort of fall into that camp for you that is on a bit of borrowed time? I mean, we've stuck by him for a number of years since that one wonderful season where, albeit he played in a different role. Do you think that maybe he's one that he had that one season and he'll never quite get back to that level, or is he just a player in the wrong position for you?
He needs to play in the number 10 role because that's where he was most effective. But the problem is that we have the best number 10 in the world. So he's not going to get there. And I think right now we're trying to fit him into the squad. Even at the beginning of the season, he had that spur where he was on the right. And I thought he'd done quite well on the right. But obviously he doesn't like to play there. He wants to play fair at the pitch. Today, he was bad, like really bad today, and I'm surprised that he stayed on the pitch. Really, really am. Like you said, Chris, like he's doing these little flicks and tricks, and I think maybe 1 out of 10 work, and it's just ridiculous that he keeps on trying it for the whole season. He keeps on trying it, but the fact I think what's more worse is that he keeps on trying it. That must mean that no one is telling him not to do it. So if you keep on trying it and it's not working, but no one's coming up to you and saying, "Don't do that," what does that say for the squad? You know, it's not being coached out of you to play simple balls. He very rarely plays a forward pass. It's always side, side, back, side, side, back. You know, I'm not saying he's got to try a 40-yard killer ball through the middle, but not every day play it backwards. Try and play it forward to someone else.
And it's either, as you say, he's not being told to do it, or even worse, he is being told not to do it, and he's doing it anyway, which, you know, does happen at all levels of football, where players just seem to have this thing that they just can't stop doing irritating things.
But then why doesn't Wenger drop him then? Take him off. Like, I genuinely am very surprised that he came out for the second half. That's how bad he was in the first half. And I think that any other manager probably would have taken him off, but at the moment, Arsene Wenger doesn't make a substitution before the 67th minute. You know, today he was just not doing just the basic things right. You know, just getting the ball down, getting your head up and popping it off. He was trying these little flicks and tricks and always going backwards. And even that says to me something about confidence. You know, why are you not playing the ball forward? Why are you always turning backwards and playing it back?
Great, yeah. And I was staggered when he stayed on and Jack Wilshere came on for him. When he didn't come off, sorry. That was beyond me, but still. Jace, try and find some sort of positives today. Mm-hmm. Trust me,
I do have a positive.
Oh, go on then. Let's have a positive.
And our good friends at Goonersphere brought it up, is the fact that now Ozil has surpassed the Premier League record for chances created in a season.
Well, he'll now get a little trophy for that.
To take the wind out of our sails, we've not even scored 60 goals off of that.
Hmm. You giveth and you taketh away.
I do. But I do think Ozil was did perform well today. I think him and Sanchez actually showed some give a shit, which we can't necessarily say about everybody else. So I do want to give them props. And it was very difficult to try and pull the positives away and have them give what they did and see the performances around them. I think that was it's difficult to watch two players who are your best players do what they do and perform how they should, and the rest of the team who should be lifted by them just don't really seem to be bothered.
I want to give someone else some praise just about as well, and that was Petr Cech for Jace as well. And he came into some criticism last week, and rightfully so, for that shot that I do think he will look at and think I should have saved that against Palace. But he was good today, I thought. He commanded the area. He was vocal. Even that last sort of last gasp chance where I think the guy was flagged offside. I think it's Defoe flagged offside, but he read it. He was out. And he did look commanding, and he made a couple of vital saves in the second half. So credit where due. You on mute, Jace? You are.
I was on mute. Yes. Credit when people are in the chat box like, no positives today. No, like there were some positives. Just because the overall result wasn't doesn't mean that there weren't bright spots. I mean, it's not like Sunderland had the ball 100% of the time and were just blasting shots at us. I think the other couple of bright spots was Iwobi did get himself into some really good positions. It was just his final ball was a little lacking. So. But yeah, I think, we do need to give some credit to Sunderland because I actually think they came out and fought very, very well. They did not make it easy for us at all, and they looked very good, sort of attacking. Obviously, we knew that we could attack down the middle of their defense because their center backs were just atrocious at times today, and we really let them off. And I think that's the biggest thing is we don't, and it doesn't seem like we have had that killer instinct. In the sort of the front part of our team for a very long time now, and we don't take advantage of the times when teams do give us those opportunities because I think they were there for us, and it's unfortunate to not see us take them.
Well, I will give a word for my man Lamine Kone, who I thought was very good for Sunderland. I thought he was very, very dominant, and actually Kasri was very good as well. But they, I mean, you know, and Defoe's movement always causes you problems. Carl, just the result notwithstanding, sorry, the performance notwithstanding, taking the result aside, but as bad as Arsenal were, did we sort of see almost the blueprint, what Sunderland did with the pressing? And I, you know, I don't want to start going into the, oh, you know, this is what Klopp does and this is what Guardiola does and blah, blah, blah. But it wasn't so much the pressing as far as like pressing the whole team up the pitch goes. What I was impressed with Sunderland was their desire to win the ball back and get after us. It seemed to force us back a lot, and we didn't seem to deal with it very well. Is that something you'd like to see our players do a bit more? Just actually go and hunt the ball back? 2-0
yeah.
Leicester.
Yeah, 2-0 Leicester. Go Leicester. Yes, Dom always says that Ramsey's got one of the best engines sort of in the Premier League, and he can run and run and run. If you have that, then why are you not chasing down players? Like, why are you not always hunting down players? I would love if our team pressed. Do you remember against Man United where for the first 20 minutes, that's all we done? We pressed them, we chased them high up the pitch, we won the ball, and, you know, we blitzed them for the first 20 minutes. Now, why can't we do that? Like, it's surely not a fitness thing. So I would love us. I mean, you got someone like Alexis who does that all the time. If everyone was like Alexis in our squads, we would win the ball back so much, and we could start attacks higher up the pitch rather than sort of on the edge of our area. But the fact of the matter is that's not the Arsene Wenger way. So we can only do what he sort of tells the team to do. If he tells the team not to sort of press that high up the pitch or not to do that, then, you know, what can we do? I would love us to play that way, but it doesn't seem like Arsene Wenger wants us to do that.
John, I think you make a good point on Alexis there. Like, you know, if the team press like he does, in a weird way, I'll contradict that and say I don't really want the team to do what he does, because he's often... how can I put this delicately? I think he often presses in the wrong areas, and it's often sort of too high up the pitch. All I would like to see is, particularly from our midfield, where we've got the holding two, is that the minute the opposition cross that halfway line, that's when we should be engaging, because that's when the team pushes. That's when essentially the team push their defence out. Once the ball hits that halfway line, most teams will push the defence on, and if we can win the ball back in that sort of centre circle area, you're immediately at their back four running at them. And that's where I'd like to see us pressing. So, you know, if they've got it in their own box and they're fanning about with their right and left back, let them have it. That's fine. But
I mean, there was and I don't know if you saw it, Chris, there was a time when Ramsey lost the ball and they broke on us, and he was telling Per Mertesacker to come towards the ball rather than him close the ball down. And Per Mertesacker went mad at him. Like, and that just shows that him playing in that sort of role, it doesn't work. Like, it truly doesn't work. And from when your center midfielder, who I don't know what he was playing, I don't know if he was meant to be the box to box or Nene was to sit in, I'm not too sure what sort of the role was today, but if you lose the ball there and you can't be bothered to run back and chase the ball down, you're telling your center back to come forward rather than close the ball down yourself, that just says what's wrong with our club at the moment.
Yeah, I agree with that. Totally agree with that. Jace, as far as the quick one on the fullbacks, do you think we're getting in? It's a bit of a weird question, but do you think we're getting enough from the fullbacks? I can't remember the last time that Nacho Monreal, who is very good going forward, by the way, sort of got to the byline and pulled something back. We've talked on this pod about Hector Bellerin sort of not inability, but he doesn't like to cross the ball, put it that way, and when he does that, they're poor. Do you think we're missing a trick just getting our full backs in behind, or is that too much of a risk because we're pushing them too far forward?
Yeah, I think it's too much of a risk because you're pushing them too far forward, and especially when you're having to put Bellerin beside Mertesacker as well to sort of have that makeup pace in there. Yeah, I do think it's a little tough to ask. We're literally asking our fullbacks to be the best at two different positions. We want them to be the best sort of wide players attacking, but then we also want them to be the best defensive players. I think that's just, it's too much to do at this moment with the team that we have. And there are other teams you can get away with it who have, you know, quicker, stronger, better center backs, and that's not to say that we don't have good center. I think we have good center backs. I think Laurent Koscielny is the closest one that you could say to be great. But I think we've got really good ones, but I think it is asking too much, especially when you do have issues with the spine, that you really need to shore that up, and we need to make sure that we can push people wide defensively. So I've always been sort of the ilk that I would much rather my fullback sort of sit back and defend a little bit more than go forward. That being said, when they have gotten forward, for some reason, I just always, whenever I see Monreal going forward, it almost seems like he's always on the end of a cross from a forward or a attacking wide player, and then he has a volley that just goes like 85 miles wide. And I'm like, why is that? Why are our fullbacks the one on the end of those balls and not our strikers? And two, it's sort of like, you know, why are you that far for? Why are you ahead of everybody else? I get that Wenger probably wants them to play more offensively, but I would much rather them just do their defensive duties and focus on that first and foremost. You know, that should be their first, second, third, and fourth priority, and then fifth priority should be get forward. The final ball from them when they have gotten forward, you're right, it has been lacking. And it seems like Hector Bellerin does want to cut inside more and get it into the box. And it does seem like Nacho Monreal, whenever he does end up getting a cross in, it seems to be when we don't have anybody in the box, which is very frustrating.
You want your defenders to defend. That's a novel concept, Jace. It'll never catch on.
I think we've passed that point in modern football.
True. Yeah, true that. True that. With Carl, we're just coming back to the sort of the forward line, the offensive positioning. You know, I get the criticism for Giroud. Some of it is merited. Some of it is entirely not merited, in my humble opinion. But is there an argument that we're not actually feeding our strikers correctly? I know it's a bugbear that Tom's brought up before, in that we're not really playing to the strengths of a forward player like Giroud. It was very evident again today, where we're either playing it in for him to flick on to somebody who isn't behind him, or we're not getting to the byline and picking in a cross and going, right, go and attack it. Do you think that's a criticism that should be levelled at Giroud because he's not getting in there in those positions, or do you think that we've got the wrong type of forward for the system we're trying to play?
A bit of both, to be honest, Chris. I think Giroud would be so much better in a 4-4-2. I can imagine him and Defoe working so well together, because you'd hit the ball up to Giroud, Giroud would knock it down, and Defoe would just pounce on anything that sort of drops down inside the box. And the problem is that our sort of attacking midfielders are so far away from Giroud, when he does sort of knock it down, there's no one there, because 9 times out of 10, it's Ozil who's hitting the ball up to Giroud. And unless you've got the wide right or the wide left sort of midfielder running onto these balls that he's knocking down, there's no one else there. In the system we have, personally, we need a fast, pacey striker, someone who can run in behind. You know, if Theo Walcott could put the ball in the back of the net, he would be absolutely brilliant for sort of the formation that we play. But at the end of the day, Theo Walcott's another thing. I'm sure we'll get onto that. But Welbeck, I think, sort of does suit this formation that we play, because he can drag people out wide, he can run in behind, he can hold the ball up. Giroud can only sort of knock the ball down. Giroud can't run in behind. He's not that guy. Like, and we don't put enough crosses in the box for Giroud to attack, you know, and he's very static. I've realised today, like, he just doesn't run onto balls. Like, there's times when you think, right, run to the back post, run to the near post, but he doesn't. He just stands there, and you're thinking, come on, Giroud, just move so that Ozil can find you, or not even Ozil, anyone can find you in the box.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's almost a double problem, isn't it? A double issue of doing two things the wrong way and putting square pegs into round holes, as the saying goes. You mentioned Mr. Walcott there. I think it's probably a good time to bring him in. Jace, I'm really torn on this one. I don't like people that just mindlessly abuse any player that we have. And, you know, I'm sure Theo Walcott is a lovely guy, and I'm sure he writes lovely kids' books. And, you know, I'm sure his career could have gone a very different path had we have played him in a different position, etc., etc. But there comes a point where Old Yeller has to be taken out the back and shot. You know, it comes to us at every point, or it comes to some people at every point in life. And sometimes you just have to say, maybe after 9.5 years and 130 grand a year, surely there is a better option. And him kind of coming on today, and yeah, I know he kind of hurdled a challenge that he thought was coming when it didn't come, and then he ended up sort of just hurdling thin air. But that just summed him up, didn't it? You know, I just, what happens for Theo Walcott? Surely the club are open to selling him now, surely.
Yeah, well, and I think what happened to Theo Walcott was that he got a bad case of the contractitis.
You got a bad case of the robots.
Oh, no. That's not good. I'm Walcotting it. Let me jump over this challenge real quick, see if this works. Okay, hopefully I'm a little better now.
No.
No, not at all. No. go to Carl with that. I'll complain about Theo in my head.
All righty, I'll go to Carl, and then I'll come back and see how you are in a minute. Go on, Carl.
Yeah, I was watching the game, and I'm sitting back and I'm looking at the TV, and you know, I see Mignone come out and suicide header with that, try to head it on, and I'm thinking, okay, Danny, go. Danny gets pushed over, and I'm thinking, foul, but no, referee hasn't called it. I see Fear running in. Stupid me, I actually got excited. Don't even know why. I thought, my God, Fear's going to run onto this ball and he's just going to hit it. He ran and he jumps over the ball. I have never said so many expletives like watching Theo Walcott ever. Like, I don't understand. There's two things I don't understand. One, if he just fronts up, the ball hits him and the ball's going to not get knocked forward. I don't understand. Two, why is he jumping over the ball? Like, is he trying not to get injured so he goes to the Euros? Like, Theo, you're not going to the Euros. Let's be real. You're not going. I don't understand why he jumped over the ball. I seriously would love Arsene Wenger to sit down with him and let him see that. I mean, he's going to see. He's going to be all over his Twitter. I don't know if he actually tweets like himself, but he will see that. He definitely will see that. And I would love to sit down with him and say, what the hell was you thinking? Why did you jump over the ball? Why didn't you kick the ball and run onto it? If he kicks the ball and runs onto it, the goal is wide open. There's no way that anybody's catching him. Like, Theo, look how quick he is. Like, there's no way anybody's catching him. And he jumped over the ball. That is just absolute one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. Like, you see some players sort of shoot when they're not supposed to, or play bad passes, and you think, oh, for God's sake. But you know they're trying to do something positive. There was nothing positive about Theo Walcott jumping over that ball. Like, what is he trying to achieve? I am absolutely just don't understand what he did there.
No, I must admit, I was like you. I got excited for a second, and then I remembered and thought, oh, no, hang on, no, that's not going to work. I have to say, by the way, Welbeck was fouled by Cabal. That should have been a free kick. And I suppose technically he would have been maybe last man as well. So.
Oh, yeah, he would have been sent off.
Yeah.
It's not, I just don't get what Fee was thinking. Like, you know, if you're trying to win a game for your, you're trying to win a game for your club, and, well, like I said, if he gets that ball, there's no one there, you know, because the goalkeeper's not getting back, Cabal's not getting back, so he has a wide open net. But no, he jumps over the ball. Like, I clearly don't understand what he was trying to do, and I hope Jason can sort of add to that.
Yeah, go on, Jay, see if you're alive again.
Yeah, let's hopefully all the robots are gone and I can slay Theo Walcott with the best of them.
They're still there.
They're still here. Unbelievable.
Close all your windows and...
They're all closed. They're all closed. The phone is off the network. It's
We jinxed it.
I've come out of the second half gates here very much like Ramsey.
Try and pull it out and put it back in, as the vicar said to the schoolboy, and I'll come back to you.
Yes.
Let's see if we can do it that way. Carl, something we talked about pre-game, and sort of kind of wondering what your thoughts are, would do it live. And I was saying to you that I wonder if some of the players, they almost look afraid to play. And what I mean by that is they seem to be hesitant. Nothing seems to be coming naturally. There doesn't seem to be any flow to the game. You know, everything is very stop start. It's very much like Jace's audio. It's just sort of it's just not quite. Nothing is smooth. You know, and you watch teams like Leicester and some other team, never heard of them. It's very fluid and it's very natural. Do you think that some of the players are just not confident enough to try things? And is that essentially holding back? Do you want to see somebody like Iwobi has, for example, just try something, you know, just see what comes off?
Well, Ramsey's not scared to try stuff because he tries his flicks every bloody game.
The wrong stuff, yeah.
Yeah. It just seems like the club are playing, I don't really use this terminology, with the handbrake on. I hate saying that. But, you know, you're right what they're saying. It's like they're so worried about messing up. They don't really go to try anything. Like, you know, like the stuff like shooting from outside the box. You know, the fact that we've only scored, what is it, four before West Brom, we only had two goals from outside the box. You know, and I know this is thing about, you know, the closer you are to the goal, the more likely you are to score. But just little things like that, shooting from outside the box, why do we not do that? You know, I know that the running joke on ABW is, should we shoot more? You know, and it's one of them jokes that I've gone on. I mean, ever since I heard that on the pod, I laughed as well. I really did. But as the years have gone by, you're thinking, was that such a stupid question? You know, should we actually shoot more? You know, and it's almost like the team is sort of scared to shoot. So if it doesn't go into the back of the net, you know, the groans from the fans and then the inevitable people start tweeting players. Like, I don't believe in people tweeting players because it's just ridiculous saying, oh, you're shit, you're this, you're that. You got to voice your opinion, fine, do it. But don't at the players and say, oh, you are shit or you this. Like, because clearly the players do read their Twitter. I'm sure they do, you know, and they see things like that. And that will just let your confidence get even lower than it already is. I think that... I was saying to you earlier, Chris, the fact that a lot of the players are sort of playing this badly all at once is something internal in a club. Like, you cannot have all these world-class players, and let's face it, some of them are playing this badly all at the same time. So what is it? Is it a psychological thing? It's not a physical thing. You know, is it a tactical thing? No one can sort of know. No one can put their sort of finger on a button and say exactly what it is. And it's worrying for me. It's really worrying. Imagine we were in this form in like September, October, and we carried on for the rest of the season. Like, we wouldn't be where we are now. We would be much lower in the table.
Yeah. On the abuse thing and all that, I would never, ever understand anybody that does that. Just, I cannot get my head around it. Jace, let's try again. Any good? Maybe. Fingers crossed. No, I can't even hear you at all. Brilliant. This is working well. Ah, Jesus H. Try leaving the chat and coming back in, Jace, see if that works. Sometimes that works. Oh dear, somebody's got it in for our Jace, I tell you. And Danny, no, it's not my PC, you cheeky man. Okay, Carl, I'll just stick with you again for a minute and see if Jace exits and comes back.
Can we mention one thing as well? The Koscielny duck from the corner.
Oh yeah, we should mention that. I have a theory on this. I'm pretty 99% sure I know why he does it, but go on.
Are you going to say that you think he got a call?
I think he does. If you watch the replay, Petacek seems to call. At least that's what it looks like. I may be wrong.
I don't understand.
Doesn't excuse it, by the way. Just
you're a centre-back, and Koscielny is a very good centre-back. You know, he dips in and out, but Koscielny is very, very good. Why the hell, when a corner's coming in, he ducks under the ball. Like, okay, I know you're going to say he may got a call and, you know, I don't understand, but your first job, your first priority, get that ball out of the box. Even if you get a call and you're not 100%, get that ball out of the box. From a corner, if I understand if maybe it's not a corner and the ball's rolling back, but I don't understand, he ducks and there's a player behind him. And even if he does get a call and he ducks, where's the player that gave him the call to claim that ball? Like, could you imagine if we conceded from that? My word, I don't understand. Like, it's known when we say that Arsenal shoot themselves like in the foot. That is typical of what we do. That was suicide kamikaze defending. It really was. Like, if I was Arsene Wenger, I would have been going ape shit at that. Like, I really would have. That was hands down probably one of the worst bits of defending I have seen. Like, I genuinely don't understand where that came from. I don't. And it is worrying. I mean, it's not something he does every day. I mean, I know he used to turn his back a lot, sort of, when he got shot straight at him. But that duck was just one of the most ridiculous things I have seen.
Agreed. Yeah, I like you say, I kind of want my centre back just to deal with that. Like, you know, even if you get a call, I just want that. I just want it dealt with. So I'm totally with you on that one. What do we think of the run in now? Are we still sort of? Are you in the camp that says fourth is what we're looking at again? And I know before everyone jumps on that, I know it's not what we want, obviously, but do you still believe? I still think we can get third based on the home games we have left. And maybe it's going to come down to that Man City game, which we could catch them at a good time. Who knows how the Real Madrid game goes? But are you thinking third or fourth at the moment?
I'm going to be honest, Chris. I'm thinking fourth or fifth. I don't know. Because Man United are 4 points behind us with a game in hand, I believe. And like you said, ultimately, they could lose both games. You know, Man United are very hit and miss. So there's no guarantee they're going to win both of those games. But you're looking at the game and you're thinking, at the form we're in, and we're not, and it could go down to that Man City game. And if we play at Man City the way we played at Sunderland, they will roll us over. Like, I can't remember where their Champions League game falls between when they play us. Like, if it's a week before they sort of play us, then I have no doubt they'll play like a weekend team.
I think it's a week after. I think it's by the time the second leg is done is when we
they probably won't then. But I know sometimes we do play better when we play these supposedly bigger teams. I am seriously looking behind us rather than looking ahead of us, because if Man United do get on their roll and they are starting to get some of their players back, I truly think that it's possible that they could catch us. I'm slightly worried about them catching us. I really am. And us dropping out of the Champions League. I know people say, oh, if we drop out of the Champions League, Wenger will go. Regardless of that, one, Wenger's not going anywhere. He's not. And two, you really do not want to drop out of the Champions League, because if you think it's hard for us to attract players now, if we're not in the Champions League, it's going to be 10 times harder for us to get players of the quality that we want.
Yeah, I completely agree. And Jason, I'm going to try you again in a second. I just want to say on that, I see a lot of people that sort of say on Twitter and various things, you know, I'd like to see us out of the Champions League for a season. Maybe it'll show Wenger this, it'll show that. It won't, you know, and people need to just seriously just need to understand and get real that dropping into the Europa League is not going to promote change. It will not change a thing. Seriously, that all the board will look at is, okay, we're out of it for a season. I think Gazidis said, didn't he, a few seasons back, that, was it even this season? I can't remember, but I think he said that the money was in place to cover if we were ever to drop out of the Champions League. And if that is the case, there is no way that the club are going to act. If we're out of the Champions League for three or four seasons in a row, yes, fine, I get that. But to say that you actively want the club to fail to be in you know, the top competition monetarily and attraction wise for players, is madness. It's about as useful as holding a banner up, in my opinion. But hey, we won't go into that. Jace, are you alive? Let's have another go.
Domo Origato, Mr. Roboto.
Yay!
Are they all gone?
You sound like Raj with a mouthful of gatto. Shout out to the Reverend.
If only I was on the Rock right now, I would be living the life with him.
Yeah, I'm gonna start.
Congrats on his marathon run today, by the way. Four hours and 12 minutes.
Superb, especially with that many pizza toppings. It's surprising you can even move.
I know.
Do you want to have your say on Theo? Because you know, you haven't really had your say on him. I know you were burning at the seams to get something out.
Well, I think it's just it was so much hype so soon when he was brought into England at a very young age, and he seems to be a contract year player, where unless he knows that contract is expiring, he's happy to just sort of get by making his living. And I'm sure he could do that at other clubs, but at Arsenal you can't get away with that. The fans, we're going to hold you accountable for that. And sadly, it seems like it's only the fans holding him accountable for that. And one of the most depressing things is we continue to go with a lackluster Theo Walcott over a Joel Campbell, who, if my memory serves me correctly, in his last match that he played as a sub, even coming on in like the 78th or 79th minute, he had an assist and like two chances created as well. And yet he continues to get passed up, and it wraps up the whole mindset and philosophy of the club, which is let's play it safe with what we know, and what the tradition has been. And tradition's great, and it's one of the reasons why I love Arsenal, is because we have a great tradition. But when people look back at this time in our history, we're not continuing that tradition. We're not building a new tradition. We're just sort of in purgatory, is the best way to describe it, as a football club. And it's very depressing to see, but I really think that Theo Walcott really sums up what's wrong with the club, where it's just this systemic sort of complacency with what we know is safe and what we know we'll get, and hoping it goes better by doing the exact same thing. And that's the more worrying thing to me, is just, and it's not just the and look, I've got more of an issue with the owner than I do even the manager or the players, and everybody knows I'm no fan of Wenger. I've wanted him gone in a respectful manner, I might add, for a long time now. But there's a systemic issue with the Arsenal that we've become synonymous for, and it's just sort of a complacency in saying that we have a certain way of doing things. And you can have a certain way of doing things, and that's fine, but don't blow smoke up my skirt every morning and say that we have ambition to win the league when we only have ambition to win the league a certain way. Tell me that, and I'll go, okay, like I accept that you're trying to do it this certain way. Don't just say, hey, we want to win the league at all costs, because you're not going all in, like we said we're going to do. We're not doing that, and it's very disappointing to be a sort of a fan of the club at the time, because I think we've also become very spoiled. I mean, Arsenal had some very long dry spells in the last century without a title, and folks like the Raj Patels and the Jeff Arsenals and the Mark Kings have seen teams that were not that great. And now we've got this younger generation, and I'm included in that who I've known nothing but, you know, and heard of nothing but great success at Arsenal. And here we are now, where, you know, we're questioning sort of everything about the club. And it's very sad that we've had to go down this path that's led to where we are today. But at the same time, we're still very fortunate, because, you know, in the 70s, we were fighting off relegation at times. So, you know, I guess it's all about perspective and the different standards that we've set for ourselves. But now that we have set those standards and we're trying to say that we live up to them, we're not doing a very good job of that.
Agreed, and very well put, very articulate as well. And may I just add, Jace, that the Chris Carpenters of this era have also watched some bloody terrible sides as well. I'm not young myself, and trust me, 94-95 in particular was a low light for me, but some of the 80s also was pretty tragic. Anywho, we will take some questions in a moment, so do feel free to pop them into the old chat box. Just gonna give the listeners a little update on a couple of things that are something I had to say after the game. Please, people, if you want to comment and stuff, just do it with just a bit of decorum. Don't mouth
just
each other
don't
off.
No, do it, comment to yourself, and then just delete it from the chat box because we don't want to hear it.
Yeah, basically. I don't want people to fight. We're all love here. Basically, Arsene Wenger said after the game, on the game we had good cohesion and movement off the ball in the first half, which I don't disagree with, in fairness. The second half, we dropped physically and the game became more tight. Both teams had chances. In the first half, we should have run into the dressing room with a lead, but overall, that's the story of the game. On Sunderland making things difficult, he said, I felt they did. I felt that they were a team ready to fight for their lives. They never gave up for the 90 minutes. We should have taken advantage of the level of anxiety in the game, but we couldn't do it. And the fact we played Sunday, Thursday, and then today, we suffered a little bit physically in the second half, and the game was much more difficult. Penalty shouts. He said, I wouldn't have given them because the players were too close for the player taking the shot. I agree on both of those, by the way. On Arsenal lacking goals, maybe in front of goal, Olivier Giroud cannot seem to score. But he does not completely have the same confidence. You go through spells like that. I believe in him and give him the support he needs for his confidence. And on his confidence, he says his performance are about his confidence, but I think he will come back. He's gone through spells like this before, which is true. And then finally, on not winning the title, he said it's disappointing because we play to win the league, and the fact that we have not won is, of course, frustrating, like it is for many other teams. So, obviously excluding Sunderland on that one. So,
can I say something about the confidence thing as well for the whole team?
Yeah.
Why can't we just, instead of training for one day, if we knew that we had a tight turnaround, instead of training one day, what you do is you get everybody in a film session and you show them when we beat Bayern Munich.
Or you get Ricky Gervais and a guitar and you put them all in a circle and you sing She's Gone.
Yeah.
That would also be the way forward.
There are ways to instill confidence. And it just seems, and I'm not there, I don't know, maybe they are doing some of this stuff, but like, when a striker, when I worked at the Railhawks, if a striker had a streak without any goals, we would, our first team coaches would literally sit him down with a montage of all of his goals up until then and go like, look, you've got it in you. You just need to believe in yourself. You have it. You've done this before. And it just seems like we just talk about this lack of confidence, but I don't hear or see anything that shows me that we're actually really trying to rebuild confidence other than saying, go out. Be a good player. You've got it. You need to show these players that they can do it. Give them that memory of, hey, yeah, this is when we did that. We went forward. We attacked. We played against Bayern Munich. Yeah, we did it in a different way than we usually do stylistically. But we just seem like we're just it's just all talk and there's no real action behind it. And I think that's where I get frustrated by seeing all the quotes about confidence and all that kind of stuff, because it seems like we're not doing anything to really instill that confidence other than saying, you're a good player, you should play better.
Yeah, thank you to Dan Cronin, by the way, Free Love Freeway, excellent, Dan, thank you. Do you know what, I think, again, this is probably a personal opinion, but I think that too many people make too much of what the manager says in public. I really, really believe that. I would be more concerned about what is or isn't being said behind closed doors rather than what's being said to the media, because, you know, he's never going to come out and say, yep, we were shit today, on we go to the next one. You know, it's just not going to happen. So, yeah, I think people take too much at face value. And, of course, we all know that Arsene Wenger does have, you know, a good relationship with the media, but a spiky one at sometimes. And he's not going to give them what they want in form of a quote if he feels it isn't going to benefit the team. So, you know, I think some people take that a little bit too seriously, personally. But hey-ho. let's see what we've got then, questions-wise. Carl, I'll put you in charge today, because I am lazy, as everyone knows. So I shall hand over to you, and let's see what we've got in the way of questions.
No worries. This one will go to Jason. From Christopher Atwood. Kozola may not be 100% next season due to his injury / age. Who could we possibly bring in to replace him for this position?
Christ, I don't know.
Andy Carroll.
Perez? I don't know. Let's find. On transfers, you're definitely asking the wrong guy. I do think somebody does need to be brought in. There are so many players that I don't know or watch that probably could do a job, and fill those shoes. We talk about Santi, and I just thought back and I was like, God, I miss Arteta from like 2 and 3 years ago. Like, what would he do for this team right now? His calming presence. Oh man, it would just from 2 or 3 years ago. Just how he was the midfield metronome, and you knew what you were going to get at time in, time out. We just don't seem to have that now. And Cazorla did bring that. It's just I think we should bring somebody in that is similar to him. But at the same time, I don't know. Freddie Lundberg. Let's bring him in.
I'll just chuck mine in. I've been saying it for months, but I'll keep saying it. Nabil Fekir is so perfect for that role. And you know, I will be brokenhearted when he ends up at Man City and doing stuff there. So, yeah, get him in. Get it done. Another question, Carl.
Okay. This is for you, Chris, from, who should we have? Benny. Is there too much focus on Wilshere getting to the Euros? Would you have taken off Ozil during this game?
No, I wouldn't have taken off Ozil. As much as his form has dipped in the past few weeks, I saw somebody in the chat earlier on say that he's been average since the early part of the year. If that's average, I quite like a piece of that. But I think that Mezut can always create something in the blink of an eye, and I was really surprised that he came off. In response to the second part of the question, I wonder how much is being made of Jack Wilshere's desire to go to the Euros, and maybe that's being pushed to the front of the queue of things that we talk about. From my point of view, I'm fine with Jack Wilshere going to the Euros if we get 3 really good games out of him between now and the end of the season. If I had my choice, he would be on a sun lounger in the middle of the ocean where he can't smoke anything, drink anything, or do anything, putting it politely, and I would have him feet up for the whole summer, particularly because, although saying that, actually England will be home within the first 2 weeks anyway, so it's not too big of an issue. But you know, I just think that he's been through so many issues. But I suppose the flip side of that, and this is probably one for Dom more than me, but maybe he actually needs the games in the summer, and maybe that will kickstart potentially a good season next year. So I suppose there's arguments for both. But as far as is there too much attention on it? Yeah, maybe. But I suppose Jack's a proud Englishman. He wants to play for England, and that's up to him, I guess. I just want to see him fit for Arsenal more than anything else.
No, agreed. Definitely agreed. Jason, one for you from Soundscape Flame. Why does Wenger persist with Walcott when other players deserve his place on merit? I assume he's probably talking about Joel Campbell.
Yes, please, Joel Campbell, because I love him. He's from CONCACAF. He destroys the United States whenever he plays them. But that being said, I have I think Frederick Dunnell and me had a conversation. It must be with the contract situation. It must be either one, we're trying to sell him, so put him in the shop window. The sad thing is Walcott's really not doing himself any favors in terms of picking up a good suitor with the way he's been playing. But that's got to be one of the main reasons. Logical reason. Other than that, it's not that, it's just Wenger's blind loyalty to his sort of homegrown projects that he has, and Walcott's one of those, and it's just that stubbornness of of forcing him, like, I know I'm gonna make this work no matter what. And he just keeps trying to knock down that brick wall with the rubber ball, and it's not gonna happen. And I think loyalty can very cutthroat. I thought probably a very capitalist thing to say, but loyalty will really only get you so far in competition. There are times when you need to forego loyalty for the greater good, and I think this is one of those times.
What do you think has actually happened? Everyone else can see it apart from the person who actually matters. So obviously, Arsene Wenger will always persist with Theo Walcott for some unknown reason, but all the fans, you know, they're crying out for Joel Campbell. Even today, you know, the amount of times that the fans sung Danny Welbeck's name to sort of have him brought on. And it's almost like, for me, Arsene Wenger stubbornly didn't do it until he was ready to bring on Danny Welbeck.
But that's because, Arsene's done this for 30 years, and we don't have anywhere near the experience that he does, Carl. We don't have his eyes that he sees the game through. Maybe Theo Walcott is the best player we have in training. That could be a legitimate. He may be like a training ground hero. And I'm sure Chris has probably even coached a few of those in his time who were just magnificent in training. And then you put them actually on the field with 11 other players of similar ability, and they run 400 miles past a challenge and end up falling down.
You've gone a bit robot there again, Jess.
Can I just chuck one in very quickly on just to add on to that, Carl?
Go for it.
Two things is talent will what's the phrase? If you refuse to work hard, no. Oh God, I'll have to try and think of it. The talent and the work hard phrase. I shall have to look it up because it's going to really bug me if I don't look it up. Hard work will always out. Well, I always outdo talent when talent refuses to work hard. Now, you can't really necessarily level that at Theo Walcott as such, because I'm not 100% sure the talent's there. But I guess the point is, and I agree with Jace, is that sometimes a player can really do things in training. Apparently, Aaron Ramsey is unbelievable in training. Like, unbelievable. He really is, like, just sensational. And yet, when it comes to a match day, some players just don't step up or just can't step up. So, you know, I agree with that, Jace. I think that is a fair point. And I think Arsene Wenger will always do it his way. And trust me when I say he doesn't give a monkey's how many people are going to boo or heckle in the stands. I just don't think he does. I think he's very much set in his ways for that. And to a certain degree, I can sort of understand that, because if I had somebody telling me how to do my job when I sat on a Sunday morning every day of the week, I'd probably get a bit cheesed off as well.
Doesn't Danny do that, though?
Well, yeah, but I ignore Danny because it's Danny. And thank you, Truguna, for putting that phrase in there. I couldn't get it out for a second. And also, the other thing was as well that I thought was very interesting. Did either of you, Jace, I don't know if you got the same coverage we got in the UK, but I don't know if you saw this, Carl, with the interview pre-match on Sky Sports, and they interviewed us and they were asking him about various bits and bobs, and he said something that really perked my ears up, and it was, I can't remember the exact quote, but it was something along the lines of that certain players nowadays are being essentially just, I can't remember the exact word he used, let go of, binned, rubbished, whatever the word he used was. Did you see that interview? Did you see that pre-game?
No, I didn't see it.
What he was essentially saying was, and Janu, final warning, my friend, final warning, you know why. What he was essentially saying was that some players years ago, you could stand by them, and no matter what you did, you would stand by them, and you keep working at them, and you try and nurture talent. Whereas nowadays, with the money that goes on in the game, it is very much it has to succeed now. You have to succeed now. It is all the here and now, and if you don't succeed, you're gone. And I just wonder if he's now sort of coming round to the idea that as much as his projects are great, and as much as he believes in these players, maybe he is starting to get to that point where he goes, you know what, I can't anymore. I just can't. I've had enough. They've got to be gone. And I know a lot of people will immediately say, well, it's 3 years too late, 4 years too late, 10 years too late. But I thought to say that in a public interview was quite interesting. So I wonder if maybe he's reaching that point where he says, you know what, can't do it anymore. Theo, on your bike. It'll be interesting. be interesting. But do look up that interview if you haven't seen it, and you can judge for yourself. Anyway.
That segues on to something, Chris, that I want you to answer. From Daniel Cronin, do you think we need a director of football to handle player signings, either now or when Arsene Wenger leaves?
Yes, I do. But it's a difficult one. If he comes in with Arsene Wenger in place, I think it's largely pointless, because Arsene will always, you know, whether you like it or you don't, will always have final say. So no, I can't see that happening while he's in place, unless it is David Dean himself, which will never happen. And by the way, as much as what David Dean did for the club, and I'm not going to deny he did a fantastic job, let's not forget he was the one that sold to Stan Kroenke, by the way. So he's not whiter than white in all this. But I think in David Dean, Arsene Wenger had a friend who he trusted above anybody else, and who did the job ruthlessly. And I think he was essentially doing a lot of the business that Arsene wouldn't pull the trigger on. I don't think that will happen now, because as far as Stan Kroenke is concerned, the less people he has in control of the purse strings, the more money he's going to make. And as long as Arsene Wenger is in control of the purse strings, he knows that Wenger will probably not pay the sort of money that he would have to fork out for certain players. However, if we were to get a new manager, I think you have to give them a season to see what their philosophy is, and you have to see whether they can bring in the sort of players that we need. But if they can't, I don't see it would cause us any harm, and I can see what we've got in place at the moment in Dick Law and all of his outlaws, and all the cowboys that ride alongside him. They don't seem to be able to get deals done, and I don't think Arsene Wenger can be solely accountable for that. He has a big say in it, definitely, but I don't think that he can be fully accountable to that. I just think there has to be somebody else accountable. And Johnny makes a good point, actually. Sorry, yeah, David Dean did sell out to Usman. If I do apologise, I will. I'll take that comment back. My point being, I think Kroenke was part of the agreement. David Dean was partially agreed to pass on the shares to Kroenke. But yeah, I mean, I just think that somebody has to be alongside us, to make those decisions. And if Arsene Wenger goes to the board and says, I want this player, something is going wrong between the identification of a player and the signing of a player. Something is not going right. And you can take this all the way back to Gary Cahill, Leicester 3-0 manager. So yeah, something's wrong. And Jace, you wanted to just have your say on that as well.
Yeah, just real quickly, I do think if we ever get a director of football when Wenger is here, that's the door is now open for him to leave, officially. Because he's come out in the past and said that he will never work under a director of football. That's just not his style. So I think if we do see that under Wenger, that's the first domino to fall in the actual transition of Wenger away from the club.
Yeah, you've been captured briefly then. You came back again then, Jason. Also, thank you, Danny, just in case anybody obviously not watching this live. Danny has corrected me, and he's bang on. David Dean was told to find new owners, and he found Kroenke and Usmanov. So he's still slightly accountable for what is in place. I think that's fair to say. Another question, Carl, and then we'll move on.
All right, I'll do two more. Last one, sorry. Second to last one from Alistair Smith. How likely is it that next season we are similar to Chelsea in the state that players aren't really playing for the manager and the club capitulates? I'll take this one, actually. I personally think whether Arsene Wenger stays or goes, it needs to be sorted out very early. You know, if this is going to be his last season, I think it needs to be said very early, because players will always have this on their mind, you know, is the manager. Just like when Man City went through their little dip, when Pellegrini was told that he wasn't going to be there next season, you know, they're thinking, well, what's the point of me playing for this manager? You know, he's not going to be there next season. I don't think we'll ever be as bad as Chelsea were, because the Chelsea players were blatantly not playing for the manager. They were, I think... my views only bordering on match fixing. I do, because you can't play that badly. So something happened within Chelsea where their players were just thought, I'm not playing for this manager. Because literally, as soon as Mourinho left, they started playing, well, okay football. Not brilliant, but okay football. I don't think our players would ever do that, no matter how bad things got. Me and Chris were talking before we started this, and I was saying that I hope the players, other teams will get better next season. That's without a shadow of a doubt. Other teams will improve. You know, Man United will not. I hope they may improve. Chelsea will blatantly improve. That lot from up the road, they're probably going to improve because they're going to be in the Champions League. Man City will improve because they have Pep. Liverpool will improve because Klopp will have his own players at the club, so they will improve. So next season, it is going to be very hard at the top. My personal opinions are Leicester won't maintain this because they'd have to play Champions League football, and that'll be two games sort of in a week. And as good as their centre backs have been, they're over 33, I think, both of them. And there's no way their legs are going to maintain them playing two games a week. That's just my personal opinion. We won't drop as bad as Chelsea, but I think next season will probably be the biggest test for Arsene Wenger to sort of stay in the top four, because I even left out West Ham for that as well, because I honestly think that West Ham, blatantly, their stadium, they're having it for free. So you're looking at them and thinking, for cash to buy players, they're going to be able to compete with Arsenal. I mean, on buying players, whether players will go to West Ham over Arsenal, I don't know. But if Arsenal can buy a player for 20 million, West Ham could probably buy a player for 20 million as well, match us, if not outbid us, because they haven't got the overhead of the stadiums where we have, or had, I should say. So I honestly think that no matter what we do, we're not going to be as bad as Chelsea. But to get into the top four next season, I think, unless we bring in the right players, that we might struggle. What do you think about that, Chris?
I totally agree with you. I think everything you said is bang on. I think, you know, it's going to be a huge summer for buying and selling players, because let's not forget, there's a lot of teams, ourselves included, that have got an awful lot of players they need to shift out before they start buying people. I look at Chelsea and Man City in particular, two new managers coming in with their own philosophies, their own ideas. There is no way that Chelsea squad is going to play Conte-style football. And if you don't ask me, just ask Mr. Welsh, who knows a lot about Serie A. And there is no way Conte is putting up with certain players that Chelsea have got in that squad now. Guardiola, I think, goes without saying, he's not going to put up with a lot of those City players. Liverpool are going to have to clear out a lot of players. We are arguably going to have to clear out three or four. So there's a lot of players that are going to have to shift out before players can start coming in. And while those top clubs are shifting those players out, the smaller clubs with all the money are going to start buying players in. And I think it's vital that we get business done quickly. And, you know, I would imagine we will be scouting heavily at the Euros, but to be perfectly honest, I would start looking at some of the players that are not going to the Euros, because you've got all summer to start speaking to those players and getting them on board. And I'd like to see us do what we did with, I think it's the Podolski and the Shamak deal, where we had them all but done before the end of the season. And you know, just get them done early.
I think we already announced Podolski by this point in the season.
I think we had.
When we signed him.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah, the deal was in place, wasn't it, with Cologne. And of course, we don't know. You know, we could well have been negotiating with other teams for players now ahead of time, quite possibly. But, you know, obviously you can't announce that until it's done. Obviously, there's the talk of the Granit Xhaka deal. And if that is the player that we go for, you know, I personally think we could get better. But I'm not going to have a go at signing a player who will at least improve us. So, you know, I'm all for that. I wanted to ask you guys a question, actually, before we go, if I may. It's a bit of a loaded one, but I do want to ask it. I'll start with you, Chase. If Arsene Wenger was to buy, let's say, three players of a level that could could compete for the first team. I'm not going to use that dreaded world-class tag, but could compete for the first team this summer, would you still have sort of the faith to give him that final year? Or would you still...
No.
You wouldn't? Okay, fair
enough. I didn't have faith even after he won the FA Cup. I've completely... lost it. It's not necessarily just even if we bring the players in. It's his stubbornness with formations and style of play that he has to me, and substitutions as well, that I think get in the way of us. He trips himself up trying to do it a certain way instead of adapting and being flexible. So no, even with those players. It would be nice, and I certainly hope I'm proven wrong, and I'll give the manager all the credit when I am, or if I am. But even with three players, I still think he gets in his own way at this point now.
Okay. And, Carl, what's your thoughts? I mean, I think it's, as you said earlier, it's largely a moot point, because I think he'll stay for the final year no matter what. But would you be sort of confident in him going again if he was to bring in some of those players?
I've kind of lost a lot of faith in Arsene Wenger. You know, he, for what he's done for the club, is absolutely brilliant. I think he has taken this club onto another level, and he's absolutely done wonders. But I genuinely think he's run out of ideas. I honestly think that he just doesn't know what to do. He doesn't change anything, you know. He never makes a surprise substitution. You know that every single substitution is at the 67-minute mark. It's like he manages by numbers. And you got to give it, you know, people say give him time, you know, give him time. We've given the guy so much time. And, you know, I honestly think if he didn't win the FA Cup in 2014, I personally think he would have gone then. But, you know, he managed to pull it out of the bag. And for that, I absolutely, you know, I'm grateful to him. But how long do we leave it before we replace him? I just think it's going to be... I think we missed the boat personally on replacing him with either Pep or Klopp. And you're looking at football now, you're thinking, who can replace him? And, you know, Simeone, he's not going to take a step down. You know, I totally agree with Tom. Simeone will not come to Arsenal, because Atletico coming to Arsenal was almost like a step down. And then you're looking at the Southampton manager. I forgot his name. It's just totally slipped my mind now.
Koeman.
Koeman, yeah. And you're thinking, can he replace Arsene Wenger? And even that's going to take time for him to come in and sort of blood his own philosophy on the club. And with the amount of clubs that are coming up now, that is going to be so hard, because you're talking about giving him a season where he has to get top four, because there are going to be, next season, there's going to be about 8 clubs trying to get into the top four. And if he doesn't do it, then people going to say, oh, we should never replace Wenger, you know, Koeman shit. And then, but if we don't replace, if we don't replace Wenger, then people are saying, oh, why haven't we done this? You know, the club's still, it's a catch-22, you know, you don't know what is the best idea. But to answer your question, I personally, you got to bite the bullet, because you can't always be scared of this saying of, be careful what's around the corner, be careful what you wish for. You know, people take chances in life every single day, and there's no point always playing it safe just because of past experiences.
Yeah, it could go either way, couldn't it?
I do think my opinions on Wenger, with wanting him out, or with the clear understanding that I do think that we would struggle the first year or two without him, much like Manchester United have. Before we start to get that, and I'm okay with taking it one step back to go 4 or 5 steps forward from where we are right now. And we can't, barring us getting an Ancelotti or maybe like a Blanc from PSG or a Pep in the future, which all of those are extremely, like, you know, 1% and less at this point right now. Yeah, it's we're going to have to go backwards before we can go forwards at this point, I think.
So Roberto Martinez it is then. Glad we're all in agreement. Happy days. Carl, that final question you had, is it a real quickie?
It is. It's from our mate, Danny, the GFP. I really want you to think about this question because it's one of them ones that you really need to think about. He says, should we score more?
No, because if we scored more, then nobody would have anything to moan about, and it would all be sweetness and light, and we'd all be weaving flowers into each other's hair. And nobody wants to see that. So, and also, if we scored more, we wouldn't have to listen to a magnificent rant that Danny had on this week's pod. So I'm all for us being absolutely shit for several more years to come, just so I can listen to Danny rant.
Okay.
I'm joking, of course, but yes, it's a great question, Danny, and I think you should work for Sky with punditry like that.
Danny and Kerry, could you imagine them, or Danny and Jamie Carragher on Monday Night Football? Could you imagine?
Oh, imagine Danny with those names. That's why I really hope we sign the bloke from Pastadopoulos. I really hope we sign him. That'd be brilliant. Or Billy Keon from Fone from Angers. That'd be brilliant. Danny would have an absolute field day. It'd be superb.
Oh, gosh,
anyway. right. I think that's it for today. We've gone long as usual, but we don't get Jace on all the time. So I think it's only fair we give Jace a bit of time. So
more time to complain.
Oh, well, and it's your last time for a little while, isn't it, Jace? So
possibly. Well, the last few times I've come on, we've had awful, awful results.
Yeah.
So I may be putting an AEW radio embargo upon myself for the remainder of the season if things don't turn around.
We're putting you on Mugabe Media lockdown with an immediate effect. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, that is pretty much it from us. Do check out the live pod from Thursday night. It's very, very good. Very, very good. And it was very enjoyable. And yes, give us a little thumbs up if you like what we do. Give us a thumbs down if you don't. That's entirely up to you. We do appreciate everybody that joins us on the live chat, positive or negative. It makes us a good debate. So yes, thank you all very, very much. Thank you very much to Carl and Jace as well. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Sorry for the robots.
Oh, it's all right, Jace. We can forgive you. It is you, after all. But yes, that has been AEW Radio. We will return with the pod on Thursday. Have a look at the poll Danny's got up. Try and avoid the last entry on it because it's silly, cheeky bastard. But yes,
hashtag
we will return.
Carpenter out.
Yes, thank you. And indeed, he is out. We are leaving you. We'll be back after our next game, which is, I don't know, it's Norwich, isn't it, next week? I think it's Norwich. Is that Sunday or Monday? I don't know. When do we play? Saturday, apparently. Saturday at 5:30. So we'll be back on Saturday evening to talk about our wonderful 1-0 89th minute winner against Norwich. So look forward to that. Thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it as always. And we'll speak to you all very soon. Ciao for now.
Peace.
It was a very good year. It was a very good year for small town girls and soft summer nights. We'd hide from the lights on the village green. When I was 17, when I was 21, it was a very good year. It was a very good year for city girls who lived up the stair with all that perfumed hair. And it came undone. When I was 21, when I was 35, it was a very good year. It was a very good year for blue-blooded girls of independent means. We'd ride in limousines. Their chauffeurs would drive. When I was 35, the days are short. I'm in the autumn of the year, and now I think of my life as vintage wine from fine older kegs. From the brim to the dregs, it poured sweet and clear. It was a very good year.